continuing with our forecasting theme, some of you were here when we talked about the hydrometeorological test bed, which is focused on the American River. And a lot of this work is based upon that. Two pieces is how can we forecast the precip, and then, gee, how much precip actually fell? So we hope we get some more answers as HTML, at least TML continues. You know, it must be that computer language I've been around HTML, right?
Thank you, Gary, and I appreciate you inviting us to take part in the meeting. I'm going to describe basically, I'm really pleased to see there's still people here Friday afternoon.
That's quite amazing. It's hot outside.
Yeah, I guess that's the reason. Our laboratory, working very closely with folks from PSD, we just heard from, has been modeling, running high resolution ensembles in the American River Basin area for the last 3 years. And so what I'm going to do is describe some of those results to you in one particular case study. And basically just show you some of the results of our work. We have a very excellent team here. Our affiliates from both federal government, University of Colorado, and Colorado State, so University of Arizona. What I'm going to talk about today is basically the performance of our current model ensemble for quantitative precipitation forecasting. I'll discuss the IOP that Alan just talked about, the IOP-4, which is 4 to 7 January 08 event, just to kind of show you sort of the steps we go through and seeing how well these models are doing, giving us a sanity check. And then I'll summarize the performance for previous year in a little bit more comprehensive way. And then the second part of the talk is really kind of a surprising thing. We found that these ensemble forecasts could actually lead to better quantitative precipitation estimation. So a better precipitation analysis actually comes out of using an ensemble. And I'll describe that. You've seen this diagram many times before. The challenge here is to get this information in your background model. Our model domain is a fairly small domain. We're very dependent on things like the GFS for getting these kind of boundary conditions into the model. What we're after here is essentially this kind of system. Just like you would if you had some sort of illness, you would go to many doctors. And this ensemble is basically giving us a whole range of opinions in our illness. It's our ability to forecast precipitation. So on our end of it, basically what we're trying to do is provide this group of forecasts and a probability that could feed our hydrology compatriots here with a number of hydrological models, speed flow models. So you end up with a ton of opinions and basically are able to come up with a flow rate PDF. And what I'm talking about here is something that might be out there in 5 days. So that would be very exciting. Right now we're in the 72-hour range, but it isn't going to be too long before I think we can push these models out to the 5-day area. And then with good hydrological work, using things like the Advanced Hydrological Prediction System, be able to have us input these probabilities into the hydro world and come out with this PDF. So that's kind of the overall overriding goal of all the things we're doing here. Our ensemble is Alan talked a little bit about the WARF. The WARF is the weather research forecast model. The ARW is the version that's running out of NCAR. The NMM version of that is the model that's running out of NSIP. And that is the basis for the NAM. Non-hydrostatic atmospheric model that comes out on the regular National Weather Service product stream. We use the model with three versions of microphysics. It has a 3-kilometer grid resolution. All the models are initialized with LAPS. This gives us the advantage of being able to take some of this experimental data like GPS or some of these profiler winds and get those into the initial condition. So that when, as was talked about before, I think by Alan, moisture band comes down the coast and the large-scale model is missing the phasing of that, we can actually try to recover some of that structure in the initial condition. So that's one advantage of doing your own analysis and initialization of the model. We run out, run these models out to 72 hours every 6 hours. The ensemble is both multi-model, like I said, these three versions of the microphysics and also time phase. So and I'll explain what time phasing is, but that gives us, for a 24-hour forecast, that gives us 32 opinions. Basically, 4 models and 8 verification times. And this is the way we kind of do that. If you're starting a model at some delta T in sequence here, what the time phasing idea simply says at some time, all these models are verifying at a given time. So if I take, in this case, 2 models, if I only use this one time, I only have 2, I guess down here, I only have 2 members of my ensemble, but if I take a slice through this database here, you can see that I very, very, very easily get many, many, many more members in our ensemble. And the more the better, although we must confess that as we go back to some of the earlier forecasts, these guys are a little bit less accurate than these guys. So you've got to be a little bit careful. Right now we're doing equal weighting of all these, but very rapidly we're moving into the whole philosophy of weighting each of these members as to their skill and optimizing the ensemble. So talk a little bit about the HMT performance on IOP4, which was the 4 to 7 January 08. IOP4 was one of the heaviest rainfall events in 10 years. It reminded me a lot of that 1952 book, Storm. I guess probably everybody here has read that. That big storm in the Pacific Northwest with the PG&E heavy problems and things blowing down and heavy snow. Very, very similar to this one. Up to 8 inches of liquid occurred in and around the ARB. It had very high winds and extensive damage to trees, structures, and power lines, as you all probably know. If I went to another chart for this, I thought it'd be a little bit geekish here. I can show a weather map. This was a very intense and slow-moving low-pressure system that came in. There was a jet streak out here in the days preceding the arrival of this low, 231 knots, which was, I think, that's one of the strongest winds I've ever seen in the Pacific. But a series of short waves then rotated into the coast and along the event over about 48 to 56 hours, something on that order. The attendant IPW River, atmospheric river, was very, very present here, as you can see, flowing through the coast. This happened to be a forecast. This was a 6-hour forecast from the GFS, but the model picked it up very, very nicely, and that was good for some of our model performance. Just to show a surface map, for those real geeks out there, very, very strong winds coming up the Central Valley, 41 knots up at, I guess that's South Lake Tahoe, Blue Canyon, had intense winds. Actually, the radar that was operating at Blue Canyon, our radar dish was uncontrollable. It went into, I guess it actually blew back and they couldn't control it. So the radar crew actually had to abandon the site. This was the time that we were getting heavy rain and it was turning over to snow. We see very, very heavy rain all through the Central California area. So our focus is the ARB, as we all know. There's many, many rain gauges in this domain. That's the rain gauges I'm going to be looking at here for part of our verification. One nice thing about having these high-resolution ensembles is the model forecast is giving you a very explicit picture of ice and water substance. This happens to be ice concentration in yellow here, or gold, I guess it's just one of gold, where the water substance is in green. So what you're seeing here, effectively, is here's the freezing level right here. And it's actually snowing on the upper slopes of the Sierra, so that snow is actually reaching the surface. So this is a very explicit way to see that rain snow line as an opinion of one of the models. Now, we're in the process of verifying this. How good is this is the question, and that's a question we still have yet to answer. But you can see that the model is giving you a very explicit picture of where the freezing level is. This is all liquid down here. This is ice and liquid in this zone, and then all ice up here. So we're going to be looking at that as another area to study. One of the sanity checks is how well the phasing happens as the storm comes in and moves down the coast. Are these models doing a good job in forecasting the precipitation? We found that in this case, the model was a little bit early in starting the precipitation, about 2 hours early. and as a consequence, it kind of was positively biased. When I say models, I'm talking about the model ensemble. During the mid-phase here, when you had very, very heavy precipitation, these are this is the forecast here. The HADS rain gauges are similarly color-coded, so this is red and red. That's good. I think we under-predicted on the coast, which was interestingly similar to Alan's result that he showed, the coastal range. Maybe more of a challenge for these models in the higher areas. And as the storm exited, you can see that the forecast here compared fairly well. We'll look a little bit more in detail about these results. So there's three periods here. The onset period that happened, model forecast between 3 January 18 UTC to 4 January 18 Z. Precipitation started on the 4th, about 14 Z. The heavy precipitation period was 4 January 00 to 5 January 00, and then the last major short wave was 12 hours later than that for the next 24 hours. So we'll look at each of these very quickly. This was sort of the onset period. This is the ensemble mean forecast now. So you see up north, there are already amounts up to 4 to 5 inches in the ARV area where we're doing our verification. Things are just getting started. 2 to 3 inches for that time. If we look at the table forecast here, you see the mean absolute error during this period. Like I said, the onset, you kind of rush the precipitation in this area. 0.3 around 1 inches, mean absolute error positive, so that's a positive bias. The RMS error is about a half an inch. But you can see that one problem was Canada Hill here, this gauge, accounted for a good share of that error. The rest of the stages aren't too bad, but that one place, we had a lot of trouble. And there's nothing more challenging than a model forecasting for a 4-inch or 8-inch circle on the ground. So that's the highest precision. As the storm progressed, this is the 24-hour accumulated precip for the mid part of the storm when it was raining very, very heavy. You can see amounts here, 3 to 4 to 5 inches. In the ARV area. Notice too, and this is going to be something I'm going to be bringing up in a minute, we get a lot of this transverse banding in our model forecasts, where you see these maxima. When you look at the precipitation analysis, you see one big blob, but we find that the model kind of puts a lot of modulation into that pattern, and I'll explain the significance of that in the second part of the talk. So here's the big big part of the storm, where amounts forecast and observed are very, very high, 2 to 5 inches, I would say, pretty much over the area. However, the mean absolute error was quite good, 0.15. But again, Canada Hill, I don't know who's up there at Canada Hill. Maybe the batteries were weak or something. We just did terrible up there. Forecast a lot of precipitation, not very much happened. But the rest of the values, I'd say, are fairly reasonable. RMS error 0.8 inches. The final situation here was kind of a puzzling one. The model kind of quit raining, and then the last shortwave came in, and there was a lot of convection associated with this. There was a lot of cumulus-type thunderstorm-type kind of activity, and it ended up raining very, very heavily at our stations relative to our forecast. So this could have been a deficiency in the convective response of the model to more unstable conditions where you have very cold air aloft and you're getting a lot of convective type storms. So we kind of hit the bullet and lost on this one. This was a negative bias, almost a half inch less precip over the area and an RMS of 0.64. So this is the kind of thing we're doing with some of these IOP cases we're looking at in detail, trying to get the sanity check and this model is doing well. If we're trying to use these forecasts to be valuable tools. That's the question we're asking ourselves. So this is sort of a summary of IOP-4. The ensemble mean showed consistent distribution with respect to the HADS observations. That is, the timing wasn't too bad. The errors vary station by station. The average errors obviously increase as you increase the amount of precipitation. The RMS errors do go up. The ensemble mean brought in precipitation too early, with the onset accounting for a positive mean absolute error. Canada Hill accounted for most of the error. During the heavy period, there was a slightly positive but MAE was slightly positive but low. Some problems were noted in the placement of maxima relative to verifying gauges, and this accounted for a fairly large RMS error. One station, again, Kennedy Hill, accounted for most of the error. And during the final wave of precipitation, ended too early, we missed the widespread shower activity, producing a negative EME and a large RMS. Okay, that was one of the IOPs, but this is going to summarize, this should actually be 11 IOPs for the last couple of years. And one thing you notice here, what I've got over here is this is the RMS error for all the gauges in the domain with lead time at the bottom. You see a very, very consistent thing. The ensemble itself, which is right here, ensemble itself has the lowest RMS error of any of the members. We find this to be true. Usually the model consensus tends to be the most skilled forecast. And that's a good thing. Yeah, what Alan showed here with that one model, one deterministic model, you can see the model failed. But if we had had, perhaps if he had looked at the ensemble, the performance might have been a little bit better. This is the aerial spatial correlation. We want this to be to have a very high correlation between the forecast and the precipitation observations. And again, the model ensemble tended to be the best. Now, the arrow here indicates this is the NMM, the Wharf NMM, and this is the NAM proxy. We didn't verify this against the NAM because it's kind of unfair. The NAM is at 12 kilometers resolution. We wanted to have a similar thing, so we configured it identically. So it's running at 3 kilometers. So this is sort of, if you want to see what the Weather Service would have done, this is sort of the performance of that down here. So we think we're doing a little bit better, perhaps, than the national model. This is the summary verification for, again, this is 11 IOPs, not 8, I made a mistake. This is the equitable threat score. The perfect score is 1. If you're up in the 30s to 40s, you're doing very, very well. This shows, again, the ensembles in almost every case. This is 0.25 millimeters, 2.5, well, I mean to say one-tenth of an inch. This is half an inch, a one-tenth of an inch, a hundredth of an inch, and so forth. And so, again, the ensemble mean tends to outperform most of the models. In this case here, the ERW with Thompson was very close to it, about 1 inch per 6 hours. But again, it shows the value of running the ensemble. Now, we also verified our probabilistic forecast. Now this is using the called the Brier skill score. If you're have perfect probabilities, you have a Brier skill score of 1. If there's no skill in the probability, the Brier skill score is 0. And if it's negative 1, that means you have the first skill. So you do whatever exactly what your model, you do the opposite of what your model tells you. So again, for the probabilities, again this is 1/100, 1/10. Half an inch, 1 inch, and 2 inches for 6 hours. And now notice we have model ensemble, which is plotted here on the far right, has more skill just about the whole time. However, even here where it has more skill, you notice that skill is 0. So when we're talking about these big amounts, 2 inches per 6 hours, the models, at least in a probabilistic sense, weren't showing much value. That value does stand up pretty well. This is not a bad Brier score, about 0.27 or so for 1 inch per 6 hours. But for some reason, I don't know whether it was lack of number of samples or number of cases, but we just didn't show much skill at all for the very, very heavy event. So the summary of the last 2 years is the ensemble provides superior performance relative to individual members at all lead times and amounts. The ensemble mean is superior to the NAM proxy, which we assumed was the NMM carrier microfluidics at 3 kilometer resolution. The ensemble provides better probabilistic forecasts, Brier skill scores at 24 hours for amounts up to 1 inch for 6 hours, however, little skill in 2 inches for 6 hours. We're working towards optimizing the ensemble by weighting the members based upon performance in both QPF and PQPF. So that means if, for we're using some of those older forecasts, we're going to de-weight them. And we have a neural network scheme developed by Yiling Wang, our group. It's trying to do this. This is what's called an attributes diagram. And the observed frequency of an event is here. This happens to be 15 millimeters in 6 hours. So this is the observed frequency, and this is the forecast probability. Now, when you throw in a raw forecast, the models tend to be a little bit over-biased. So they're saying, oh, 50% probability of 15 millimeters in 6 hours. But when you look at how often that happens, you see that it's only 17% or so. So that's very poor performance. But with the weighting method I was talking about, if you go in there and very logically start weighting the good ones with high weights and the bad ones with low weights, we actually get corrections. And the perfect line here is the one-to-one line is where you want to be. And when we do that, we see the corrected forecasts are much, much better, much more reliable. So this is the kind of probability, if you're going to feed somebody a probability 50%, you want to make sure that it happens fairly close to 50% of the time. So that's our effort, is to get those weights defined, and it's going to be sort of a running algorithm where the weights are going to be modified for every event. You'll carry on the knowledge from past seasons as well. The Breyer skill scores, when you do that, this was the old method, the blue line, and you're going to see the increase in Breyer skill scores when you are doing better calibration, particularly in the upper and higher amounts. Now we're doing a lot better job. So these are two areas where we're going to be moving. Okay, in the first part, how are we doing time-wise? Good? Okay, yeah, that's perfect. Okay, the second part here is a QPE estimation with ensemble-derived error covariances. Our findings from our HMT case study show that the ensemble forecasts are positively biased. However, the terrain modulation is a common attribute of the forecast. In other words, where you have these ridges, you tend to see precipitation maximum. So a major water management need obviously is an accurate QPE for runoff estimates. So we propose to contribute here a combined rain gauge estimates with structure provided by the ensemble, remove the bias, and then utilize that structure and what the high resolution model is telling you with rain gauges, and then include the QPE. And we want to do this relative to the NSEP stage 4, which everybody knows is far too smooth. It doesn't uses radar rain gauge estimates, but it tends to. It's a 4 kilometer resolution, and it just doesn't capture some of the structure. So what's new here is really the application of a very high resolution ensemble to obtain detailed QPE, and we're going to use 3D variational methods to do that. I'm going to skip the next slide for a minute here, because I don't want to sicken you with an equation. I'll come back to it. Well, the case we're going to look at here is back, this was the famous New Year's Eve storm here back in 2005, December 31st, 2005. I'm sure all of you remember that. We're going to take a look and apply this technique for that particular event. Now, what we find in our ensemble forecast, as I pointed out, here's stage 4 analysis of this event. This is what we see in our forecast, these bands. And there's a close-up of that same thing. So the question is this real? Is this something that we should be considering? Is the model doing the right thing in the structure? Here's the terrain. You can see that these ridges are basically oriented pretty much wherever that upslope component, you get heaviest precipitation, just a little bit upwind and on the ridge. That seems to be where it happens, and then the shadow is on the other side of the ridge. When we did a power spectrum of this, we find that the model forecast here has a very sharp spike about 12 kilometers. And if you look at the Sierra ridges, they're roughly 12 to 14 kilometers or so. So the model is showing that. When we did the same thing with terrain, we got a very similar thing. However, the gauges, especially in the stage 4 analysis, show very little power in that. So the question is, can we basically get this back into the precipitation analysis? And that's what we're going to try to do here. So let me go back to this horrible equation here. This is a standard variational analysis where you have some sort of background. In this case, the background would be the model forecast. This error covariance is a very complex thing, but it basically shows the correlation between a difference at one position relative to another. So if precipitation is correlated along ridges, then this particular thing should reflect that. And what we're doing here that's kind of new is we're explicitly solving for this based upon our effectively two-dimensional precipitation forecast. This is where the gauges reside over here, which are the Y's, these are the point rain gauge locations. So what you're doing is that you're trying to minimize this whole thing, and what it does, it says match the gauges according to their accuracy, but basically lay the structure on it according to what the model's telling you. And that's, in 25 words or less, that's the simple way to look at that. So I'll step forward here. Now the way we do that is, if we simply look at all our precipitation forecasts and the mean, we look at the deviation for the mean for all the members go out this way, there's not too many members that way, so this becomes a half-power matrix, and then you just simply recover the full thing by multiplying those two things together. And what we do here to make things a little bit more kosher and easy to do is have a climate term in here. Climate meaning, this could be all the other IOPs, this could actually be a true climate, but having a climate term stabilizes this matrix so that when you invert it, you have something that's invertible. So, showing an example here. Here's our ensemble mean precipitation. You notice the banding. This is the ARB right here. And when we look at stage four, we get this analysis, which is, it could be right, who knows? But our question is to find out, is it right? And then when we combine the two with this algorithm, we see that we very much reduce precipitation in some of these valleys. We get a very, very banded structure. So this is matching the gauges, but at the same time, putting in the model structure. So the way we validated this was to take all the gauges in the domain and do a series of analysis. So this is our QPE. This is stage four. We did a stage four proxy and then looked at the ensemble mean itself. And the way to verify this, we randomly took out 5 to 6 gauges per realization, randomly took them out, and then did the analysis and then verified against those gauges, and we did that with 183 sets, if you will. So that should give us a pretty good indication of how skilled this is. When we look at the this is the correlation. It shows that the stage four has about a 0.8 correlation. The ensemble mean was actually quite good, 0.93, but notice that it's biased. There's more blue triangles above this line than below it. The QPE, however, has reduced that bias quite a bit, and it still has a pretty good correlation of 0.94. So that's definitely moving us in the right direction. This shows the mean absolute error, a QPE, showing a lot less error than the other two, both in RMSE and mean absolute error for this particular event. And then finally, the green line here shows QPE, this is the ETS score for the mean gauge analysis, shows it's better than both those things, both the ensemble mean and the stage four. So we feel like we're kind of pushing, taking these ensembles and utilizing them for something more than just prediction, and that is a better qualitative precipitation estimation. So to conclude the second part then, initial results are good, but occasional anomalous fields and poorly specified error covariance, you've got to be real careful there. Skip down to this one. We have to put in about a 20% factor in that climate term to make that be better behaved. And that hasn't penalized us too badly. The QPE shows an improvement over the multi-grid gauge interpolation, i.e. the stage four, quite evident there. A shorter range ensemble forecast result in better QPE analysis, so you don't want to use some really long range forecasts in that ensemble. If they're 6-12 hours, that tends to work better. And then obviously, we definitely need good quality control for rain gauges if we're going to do a good job there. So that's the two parts of my talk, and I'll be happy to entertain any questions. Thank you.
How do your verifications, I guess back here, looking at other thoughts, you mentioned Panther Hill Station, did you take that out?
No, I didn't, because in the final stage there, it seemed to be well behaved, so. And I checked with the folks at our PSP partners and made this, they said it was working on me, so. I don't know what it was, I haven't been to Canada Hill, I don't know what the train, there might be some strange train, I'm just not involved in the model, but it didn't seem to be bad, so I left it. Yes, sir.
In the first part of your talk, you talked about the wharf model cutting off the rainfall a little bit earlier. Do you have a land surface treatment just underneath the wharf model?
Basically just what comes with it, is on a land surface model.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't alter that. I forget, I think it's the NOAA model, I believe it's one.
Okay, so the NOAA model is part of that.
I think we were using the NOAA model for all the ensemble members. That would be one way to increase the number of ensemble members, have variations in the land surface model.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking the question, of course, is because Ken Mitchell and company showed that by adding that land surface treatment during the GWIX experiments, that they were able to get those moisture and energy flows between the bottom layer of the atmosphere and the land surface, and that improved by about an order of magnitude the ability to position and get the quantity right from those precepts. And that cutoff, that early cutoff, I was speculating that may have been because you weren't having the moisture flux
being fed back in. Figuring you had all the precipitation in the 36 hours before that, and then the sun comes out, you had breaks in the clouds, and getting probably a lot of moisture flux, and then very cold air off. There was a lot of instability there, probably wasn't picked up. Yes?
Just a comment. If I understand what you did on the last part of the paper, this last part of the paper is worth the paper in itself, because you put a lot of explanation into these very fine scale structures that we all see all the time, every time we turn on the radar scope. And I would like to see more detail of that in a full paper.
We're actually writing a paper right now.
I think that's great.
Yeah, and with many, many more cases. That was just one case. Yeah, the models are working right. They ought to be modulating precipitation in a realistic way. And so, while we understand maybe the models are either under or over biased, the structure is good. Why not try to use them?
Any questions? Joe?
Thanks.
Thank you.